Welcome, everybody, to another Stand Up podcast. My name is Wemer Ferreira, COO of the Outcomes Franchises at Stand Up Asset Management. Today, I'm talking to Ahmed Palmer, Investment Specialist at JP Morgan Asset Management. Ahmed, thank you very much for joining. I guess the question on everybody's mind in terms of equity is, how do you make sense of what we've seen in equity markets? So obviously, S&P, 20% correction, a subsequent 8 to 10% bounce. And I guess the overarching question is, how much of that is real read-through to earnings, and how much is it of people fearing what they don't know? DeepSeek breaking in January, Trump taking office later that month, and trade wars ensuing. So I think today we're going to try and unpack how much of that is real versus how much of that is fear. So I want to kick us off with just quickly looking back at the first quarter, touching on performance, positioning, and maybe highlighting anything that has changed significantly in the portfolio from a country or sector or even a single stock perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And first of all, let me say, as always, it's a pleasure to be talking to you today, Bimea. Thank you so much for hosting. It's another quarter that's gone by. It's been particularly eventful, but through our partnership with Stanlib and through Stanlib's partnership with JP Morgan, we're looking to navigate these very choppy and challenging markets. And look, much to your point, this has been almost an unprecedented quarter in terms of some of those market moves. And let's unpackage things one by one there, because really what we've seen over the course of the last 3 months, if we take a step back, is the two pillars that have dictated the direction of the market have very much been the news about DeepSeek and the overall impact there on US technology. And then on the other side of that as well, then as we got to the end of the quarter and indeed going through April, it's really the impact of tariffs and then how that's really escalated as far as trade tensions go. And just so taking the first point there around DeepSeek and the impact on some of those US technology names that have done so well, the Mag 7, which have done so well over the course of the last couple of years, it's really raised the question of the viability of the CapEx that many of those US names were looking to deploy in that sector. And the sensible question being posed to them, in the case of Microsoft, in the case of Amazon, Alphabet, all of these companies, of, well, what's the return on equity? What's the return on investment from all of this CapEx that you're deploying? And maybe, just maybe, the actual monetization of artificial intelligence will take longer to take hold, and it may not be as cash flow generative as expectations initially suggested. And that's really led to this aggressive pullback in some of those names over the course of this year. I mean, Mag 7, the semiconductor complex, the media names have really led down that leg in terms of some of the US names. And then the second point there around trade tariffs, I mean, this is probably the more difficult part of the conversation, because no one really knows how this is going to pan out. And if we really think about it, this is a man-made situation. And so looking at precedents from previous years, like the Great Financial Crisis, like the dot-com bubble, where we could make the argument that it was down to exuberance within the marketplace, this has been driven by and is very much a man-made scenario that we've entered into it. And that's why it's so difficult to make forecasts around it. From a portfolio manager perspective, we've really just thought about keeping our exposure within the strategy as balanced as possible over this time. But to your point, it's been incredibly choppy. And just a more broad comment in terms of tariffs. I mean, if we take the extreme scenario that really was being priced in as we were going into February, of tariffs being incredibly onerous, very, very extreme, sorry, February and then going into March, tariffs at really the extreme end, going upwards of 20% for many regions around the world, or the other side of it as far as no tariffs go, we're starting to see more news flow emerging from the US administration that, well, we're open to having talks, we're open to discussing trade deals with countries. And that plays to that base within the US that the US is, sorry, that the Trump administration is being proactive about engaging with other countries. We don't want, in their view, very much the US to be being perceived as being ripped off. And you're seeing signs of other countries being open to those discussions, whether that's Japan, for example, where the conversations with the EU and where the endpoint there is. So the ultimate endpoint that we might get to is somewhere in between these two very extreme scenarios. And again, going back to your earlier point, as soon as you see a softening in terms of some of that rhetoric, you can see how quickly the market bounces back. And that's why I wanted to stress that element of this current scenario being very much man-made. And if it is something man-made, it can be almost unwound very quickly as well, because it's so sensitive to rhetoric. And that's what really poses the challenge for investors at the moment.
Quickly, just give us an idea of where are you positioned from a country perspective? Because as we all know, the MSCI is dominated by the US around, I think the last time I looked, around 70% of the index is made up of US companies. Where are you sitting in the portfolio versus benchmark?
Yeah, so currently we are more overweight Europe, and we've leaned into some of our European names a bit more over the course of this quarter. We have pared back some of our US exposure within the portfolio. So going into the end of last year, and again, this feels like a very long time ago now, but we were slightly more overweight the US, but also paring back that position over time, taking profits on some of those high growth cyclical semiconductor names as they've done well. Admittedly, going into this quarter, could we have pared those positions back more and more aggressively? Probably, but that's one of the lessons there. And DeepSeek was really where we learned some of those lessons. But at the moment, there's an overweight to Europe being expressed in the portfolio. And again, an overweight to many of those defensive sectors, which has really provided a cushion to performance in the case of this first quarter of the year. Again, it's been very, very challenging. It's been very volatile. So that defensive exposure hasn't totally bailed us out, but it has provided a cushion there with certain names like Deutsche Börse, names like Munich Re, more defensive consumer exposure in McDonald's. Also, holding up much better over the course of what's been a very, very volatile backdrop. So, the overall positioning, I would say, is then leaning more in terms of some of the European exposure. There's also, I mean, any emerging market exposure within the portfolio expresses itself as an overweight because our benchmark only has developed markets. But we've also diversified there. There's a holding now in terms of Yum China that we've gone into. So, that's a new name over the course of this year. So diversified some of that emerging market exposure there too, and that's been driven by valuation. So that's really been the dynamic over the course of this year. It's just tempering down and tapering down some of that US weighting and building up some of that European weighting and just diversifying some of the drivers behind the portfolio over the course of the year. It's been an environment which we are adapting to, we're having to adapt to because it's just been so difficult to call.
Thanks, Amit. I think normally when you're in these type of emotionally ensued markets, people try and predict and go outside of the investment process. And I guess this is more a philosophical question that I want to ask you now is JP Morgan have been running global equities for plenty of years, and the global select strategy under the current leadership have been going for a lot of years as well. And sticking to your process is a very important thing, especially in a market like we've just seen the last quarter, even though it might be feeling uncomfortable. Maybe link what we've seen the last quarter, even though you said it earlier, it's unprecedented. Maybe link it back to periods over the last couple of years where you've done the same, it felt uncomfortable, but if you stick to that process, it pays off in the medium term.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a fantastic point because it has been challenging for performance. And during periods like this, A, it's so valuable having senior portfolio managers there to guide through and navigate through these choppier waters, but also having that very, very robust process. And absolutely 100%, we believe in leaning into and utilizing that network of 80 analysts producing those earnings forecasts around the world. And during these dislocations that we've seen right now, that we saw over the COVID pandemic as well, it throws up plenty of opportunities because you can find companies becoming good quality companies being oversold in various pockets of the market then as well. And the view from the select portfolio managers, Helgi and Christian, has been okay. It is a time to also play offense as well. And so, whilst we might be leaning the portfolio defensively, we need to be thinking about some of those more cyclical opportunities out there where our investment process points us towards to actually capitalize on those. And again, to your point, we've been managing portfolios in this space. The investment process outperforms over the course of market cycles, and market cycles take a long time to develop and negotiate then. And so, for all intents and purposes, right now, as those dislocations have taken place, we are leaning into those ideas that the analysts are generating. And it's so important to be focused on those long-term numbers that they're also predicting and forecasting there. It's very easy to forget during this volatile period that what we're really looking to do is to find winners over 3 and 5 years. And that's so important to us. And we anchor ourselves on normalized, typical operating year, 3-year estimates from our analysts, and look to forecast out to 5 years then in terms of what we think a company will return to us. And that's the real guiding principle, the North Star that guides our investment thinking and our investment philosophy.
Great, thanks for that, Amit. I want to go back to the Mag 7, and maybe if you can quickly touch on earnings growth and current valuations and your preference within that Mag 7 complex. Have that changed post DeepSeek, or are you still holding the same names you did?
I'll broaden this out from Mag 7. Let me comment on US earnings first, then I'll go more so towards that technology and also some of the other semis names as well, to, I guess, look at the entire AI beneficiary trade from the last couple of years. And we have been looking at some of our estimates for the S&P 500 and taking those numbers down over the course of this quarter. So coming into this year, estimates suggested that, okay, the S&P was going to be returning, let's say, 10 to 12% over the course of the year. Those numbers have been trued down to, say, 6 to 7%, for example, and there could be possible further revisions there in terms of overall revisions for the US market. When you're thinking about then the technology sector within that and Mag 7 within that, we're also viewing it as almost two separate plays now, because when we think about that AI monetization point I raised earlier, it's going to impact the hyperscalers differently to the chip manufacturers. And so, from an earnings perspective, the hyperscalers and those more defensive parts of the Mag 7, very, very cash flow generative, very much almost safe haven names against the backdrop of a lot of crisis in previous times. The AI monetization question for them is different, because if they stop deploying that CapEx into generative AI capabilities, very simply, it is redirected back towards other more cash flow generative areas of the business, which us as a shareholder, we don't have a problem with that. So it's not a binary choice for some of those names. I'm talking about the Microsofts, the Amazons, the Apples there in particular. On the other side of that argument, though, we've also got the chip manufacturers. Now, so for an Nvidia, for example, for a Broadcom, they're much more sensitive to that AI spend that's taking place, because ultimately it's their customers, it's their clients who are going to be actually deploying that capital, which represents revenues for Nvidia. Now, Nvidia has incredible margins for their business. What they do is incredibly sophisticated. It's not a bad company or anything by any means. But in terms of just thinking about it a bit differently, to say how much will they be impacted by any sort of pullback in CapEx and capital, we've become more watchful on some of those chip manufacturers. And so, in some ways, a more prudent way we're viewed of playing than some of the Mag 7 AI trade overall is actually thinking about not the chip manufacturers, but the equipment manufacturers for the chip makers. And many of these more downstream companies tend to be more resilient over the course of their demands. And so we've been playing some of these other names within the portfolio. Disco, which is a Japanese name, coming away from some of the US names. They're a company which designs, hopefully I capture the spirit of what they do, but grinding and slicing equipment for chips. And so they're not designing chips themselves. They sell to companies actually manufacturing chips. And again, this is a very exciting area of the market there, which is just less sensitive to some of that AI CapEx overall. And they have very, very healthy order books as well.
Great. Maybe a quick question, Amit. You did mention general earnings expectations, and we've seen soft data in the US turnover, business confidence, consumer confidence. What have we been seeing on earnings expectations globally? Have we started to see that tick down?
Yeah, so In terms of some of the weaker consumer data and some of and some of the business surveys coming off, we don't want to be dictated too much by that because we haven't seen, in terms of US earnings expectations, really there being as many downgrades. You've seen some downgrades coming through in Europe, and we haven't seen as much coming through as yet within the US. So we're still very cautious overall in terms of the picture there, and that's why we're leaning defensively. As soon as you start seeing more downgrades coming through and analyst expectations and consensus really coming down much more, I think that starts to signify we're coming towards not a bottom, but probably closer to the end of some of that volatility and the journey we've been on over the course of this first quarter than we are closer to the start of it. So we've not seen that coming through as yet. The labor market as well, although there's been some softer data, it's not been a massive cause for concern in the US. And I think that's also worthwhile pointing out there that you've still seen, despite what DOGE has been doing, for example, in terms of federal layoffs and some of that news flow, but the labor market actually remains in a relatively healthy place. And the key thing here to remember again is, and it ties back very much to the first question that you asked, but lots of this is still very much man-made. And you've got a president who, although has initiated many of these trade tensions, is still very sensitive to the stock market, still very sensitive to his base feeling like they're wealthy and like their 401ks are doing well over this period. And if you're going into midterms, then coming forward in a couple of years' time, he doesn't want to be going into that in a position of weakness. And that's why, yes, it's very difficult to position ourselves for it, but it's also important to focus on long-term numbers and read through some of this near-term noise that's taking place in the market there.
But I think there's a lot of truth in the last three answers. It's around trying to cut through the noise, stick to your process, look at longer-term data where you've got certainty rather than short-term data where there's a lot of uncertainty. So with that, Amit, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for taking the time to talk to the clients. To everybody that's listening to the podcast, thanks for listening in. Until next time, if you've got any questions, please reach out to one of your Standard representatives for more information. Thank you very much.